plane crashes don't happen often. In fact, statistically, flying is among the safest ways to get around. So when two identical planes go down under similar circumstances, alarm bells understandably start to ring. There are currently hundreds of Boeing 737 MAX airplanes sitting idle on asphalt around the world as investigations into airline crashes in Indonesia and Ethiopia reveal worrying similarities between the two tragedies. Initial reports suggest that software related to the aircraft's safety control systems was at fault, and that pilots had been improperly trained to deal with any malfunction. Despite the element of human error in these cases, the finger of blame has most prominently been pointed at the machines. This reflects a common distrust of computer systems, a kind of technophobia, and one which is particularly prevalent when it comes to decisions of life and death. This is, of course, a matter of great significance to those with an interest in connected and autonomous vehicles. Ask a technologist, and they will tell you that cabs can provide a much safer alternative to those helmed by humans. Machines, they say, make far fewer mistakes. A driverless car won't break the speed limit or get in front of the wheel after a few too many drinks down the pub. It won't drive tired and it won't take miscalculated risks. And it's not just technologists who hold this belief. When SMLL surveyed business leaders in the UK for their views on the technology, two-thirds said that they believe cabs will make our roads safer. What's clear is that a safe future will depend on reconciling the opposing sides of the argument, finding common ground between the technological evangelists and those more hesitant to trust machines. Welcome back to Journey Makers, the podcast exploring not just what the future looks like, but how we're going to get there. With each episode, we aim to tackle one of the big questions facing the future of mobility. This month, we're talking about safety, and the big question we're asking is, will driverless cars be safer than current vehicles? There were 1,770 reported road deaths in the UK from 2017 to 18, with more than 26,500 people killed or seriously injured. Debates about how the introduction of driverless vehicles might impact these statistics can be tensely fraught affairs. For many people, safety is the most important consideration to be made about a driverless future. According to Deloitte's 2018 UK Automotive Consumer Study, 49% of UK consumers are concerned about the safety of self-driving vehicles. Interestingly, however, that percentage is actually falling. In 2017, the same study found that 73% of people had those same concerns about the safety of self-driving vehicles. Any conversation about connected and autonomous vehicles will contain some mention of safety. Indeed, it's already come up countless times on this very podcast series. But are traditional death and injury reports the only way to measure the safety of our vehicles? Isn't safety also about how pedestrians and drivers feel? We've all taken journeys that didn't quite feel safe, even if they didn't actually end in an accident. How much of this issue is related to cab technology itself? And will it ever be possible to truly eliminate human error? Fail-safes are one thing, but can we ensure that they are used only in the most extreme circumstances? And how can we test to ensure our roads and our passengers are ready? There's no getting away from the fact that this is a huge and complex issue. So let's dive straight in, shall we? To help us untangle this particularly tricky issue this month, we have...
My name's Camilla Fowler and I'm Head of Risk Management at TRL.
And...
My name's Pete Thomas and I'm the Professor of Road and Vehicle Safety here at Loughborough University.
For Pete Thomas at Loughborough University, the question of safety isn't one that could be answered in black and white terms.
We often talk about safety as a binary term. Is it safe or is it unsafe? And I think this is also a challenge for industry, because that nobody ever will say that a vehicle is unsafe. That wouldn't be permissible at all. But some vehicles are, we know now some vehicles on the road are safer than others. You can look at the Euro NCAP crash test results just to see that. There's really quite a big range there. And there's no likely to be no difference when we're talking about automated vehicles. So that is also, I think, a challenge. And the challenge for the OEMs is that there is now a very high level of public expectation of safety. That we've been talking about this for quite some years. The public thinks, yeah, these are going to take crashes down to zero. Maybe they will one day when everything is 100% perfect. But there's a long way to go before that. And so that's the challenge, I think, that we have to meet.
And what's more, Pete says that even though accidents do still happen, humans have actually got pretty good at staying safe over the years.
The challenge for automation and connected vehicles is that in actual fact, humans are really very good at driving. We've had 1 million years to evolve our decision making, our sensing systems, and it's a challenge for connected and automated vehicles to improve on this. And so really overall, what we're expecting is that it's going to be some time before we've got vehicles that are autonomous and are improving on the human and are exposed, being used on the roads in sufficient numbers to make a big impact on casualties. So this is a challenge.
In some ways then, the process of ensuring driverless cars are safe means starting from square one and gathering enough evidence to prove that they're safer than the current options we have.
The ways in which we measure safety, the ultimate measure, of course, is deaths and injuries, and particularly deaths and serious injuries. That's the target of very, very many countries around the world. But the challenge comes when we want to be able to say to the public, well, this vehicle, it's a new type of vehicle. We've no experience really of seeing it very much on the road. How do we know that it's safe enough? And this is the challenge of how do we gather together the evidence that can justify that vehicle is somewhere approaching the safety levels of the human. And the dilemma, I think, that we all have in this area is that we all want to see vehicles that improve on the current system, that give us benefits for road safety, but we actually don't know the true safety levels of vehicles when they're being used either in a trial situation or in a normal use situation. We can't really tell that until there's been quite some significant experience of those vehicles where we've monitored what happens. So that's the challenge that we're facing, really.
It's clear that testing will be key to establishing and proving the safety of these new vehicles. Part of this involves understanding how accidents actually happen and the different things that might currently cause them to occur.
Really, accident analysis can really help us a lot with this to try and understand what the problem is that we're trying to prevent. And there's a number of really two broad groups of event that occurs, one that leads to a crash. One is that the human drivers do very risky things. For example, they speed, they drink and drive, they take drugs and drive. Those are all high risk activities. And you can imagine in the future when we have such vehicles that are well automated, that they won't be doing those things. And that addresses one particular group of crashes that maybe around about a quarter to a third of fatalities. But then there's a large number of crashes that occur that involve deaths, that involve serious injuries, that are a result of a mistake that people can make. And when we explore why those people make mistakes, whether they're a driver of a vehicle, a rider on a motorbike or a pedestrian, when we explore the reasons that they make these mistakes, it becomes much more nuanced. As we said earlier, that there are very many factors to do with the person themselves, but also to do with the road, the infrastructure, the movements of the other vehicles and so on, and that require vigilance, observation, perception, decision-making. And this is where the development of the vehicle systems, whether it's off-road or under trials conditions on-road, is really, really important to help us start building up the body of evidence around the systems and helping to improve the capability of the AI systems on the vehicles.
Put another way, in order to make driverless vehicles safe, we're going to have to teach them what safe actually means and how to behave safely in the world that they inhabit. This represents a considerable technological challenge.
What we're also seeing is that with automation, this does involve new sensing systems, such as particular types of cameras, perhaps with various types of sensitivities, radar systems, LiDAR systems, ultrasound systems, maybe other sensing systems. Those technologies are new to cars, but they're not necessarily new to the world, if you like. So there's plenty of experience in using those. And what we're seeing now is the manufacturers of those technologies starting to build systems that are maybe smaller, cheaper, and more appropriate for an automotive environment. But the other part of it, and that is really, really new, interesting, exciting, actually, is how we're going to make all of this work together. And this is the challenge. How do we ensure that the things that the objects and the road situations that the sensors themselves are perceiving are within, call it, the knowledge base of the vehicle? How does the, and it's the challenge of using new methods to transfer the sensory, the outputs from the sensors into a series of constructs that can be used by the vehicle systems to start making decisions about. And that's what is really challenging, it's really exciting, and really where the focus of the work is going to be for the next decades.
This technology will need to do more than just keep the occupants of a vehicle safe too.
The road safety priority of our country and across Europe and other high-income countries is moving now from the protection of the occupants of vehicles to the protection of other road users. In the Netherlands, we've already seen the largest group of casualties there become cyclists. It's no longer car occupants. And I think this drives the priorities for the future. So that gives a challenge. On the one hand, for the manufacturers of the vehicles, they, in many cases, would say that their first responsibility is to the occupants of those vehicles. But from a societal point of view, what we're looking for is a much greater emphasis on the safety of cyclists, pedestrians, probably motorcyclists. And these are all road users with increasing priority, which are much more challenging for the AI systems on vehicles. And so there's a difference there between what we might be looking for from as a purchaser or the user of an automated vehicle compared to what might be providing the best benefits overall to society.
If done correctly, Pete says, a network of connected autonomous vehicles could be programmed to respond smartly and safely to their environment.
Another factor that is much more rarely discussed when we talk about connected and automated vehicles is the aspect of connectivity. And while there are some people looking at technologies about ways of getting vehicles to talk to each other so that a vehicle can start to know what's happening a mile down the road or over the horizon or something, there's not really very many people that are saying, well, how can we use the capabilities of connected vehicles to give us true safety benefits? So, for example, it could be that if vehicles had high levels of connectivity and you're in, for example, an urban situation, it could be that the traffic management system says, look, it's 3:30 on a weekday. The kids are all coming out from school now. Let's direct as much traffic away from schools as we can because we know there's going to be child pedestrians there. And with connectivity, you can start to do that. You can get other benefits potentially as well, of course, in terms of congestion and emissions. But not many people really are starting, have yet started to think about ways of using connectivity to improve safety.
And for Pete, safety is really where this whole process does begin and end.
While we're still learning the capabilities of the new technologies as they're introduced, safety is actually the starting point. And it's the starting point for the test bed, as it should be the starting point for all people working within with these new technologies.
For TRL's Camilla Fowler, when it comes to safety, consistency is key. Establishing a safety framework helps to define and demonstrate the safety of new CAV solutions.
One of the key things that I'm involved in is the safety during the testing phase. So whilst automated vehicles are being refined and the algorithms developed, that's where my sort of key involvement is. So really the first step is to assure and demonstrate safety through the development of a safety case. And central to that are the safety assessments, which identify not only the hazards, but also the mitigations necessary to reduce the level of risk posed throughout the testing period and the trial. Now, the effectiveness of those controls can then be measured by monitoring safety information. And this isn't about monitoring the number of collisions. This is looking at maybe minor incidents or near misses, but other data such as how often the safety driver has to intervene or how often the vehicle then hands back to the control to the driver. Or you can measure safety proxies that could indicate an increased level of risk. For example, how the vehicle's positioned along a route, or the vehicle interactions with other route users. So I don't think it's just about measuring the number of collisions. It's about looking at what controls are in place and then understanding how effective those controls are.
Being able to communicate this with the public openly, honestly, and transparently is also important, says Camilla.
I think enhancing public trust in automated vehicles is really key to enabling this new technology. But one of the things that we're currently doing is working with British Standards to set out the minimum safety requirements for automated vehicle trials. And I think organisations being able to demonstrate compliance with this and then demonstrating a consistent and robust approach to managing safety is really going to provide a lot of reassurance for members of the public. And in addition to that, the new code of practice that's recently been released does encourage organisations, so testing organisations, to publish an abridged safety case. So that will enable members of the public then to have access to the high-level information about what the vehicles are, what the trial is, what safety controls are in place, and provide that level of assurance that actually these risks have been thought about and mitigated during this testing period. I think it's about being transparent and it's about being honest. If you can demonstrate that you understand your vehicle's capabilities and the limitations of your vehicle, then I think that goes a long way to people understanding what the risks are and understanding how you've then mitigated those risks.
And for Camilla, like Pete, safety measures need to extend beyond just the in-car technology.
The measures, the safety measures in place need to go beyond just the functional safety of the vehicle. And we're very involved in the operational safety of the vehicle. So looking at once you've got a fully functional vehicle, how does it then interact with the environment and with other road users? And one of the key things at the moment during this sort of testing phase is the safety driver and making sure they're trained and competent, but also making sure that the route has been selected appropriately and the route features are then within the capabilities of the vehicle navigating it. You know, so there's safety measures like putting in mitigations on the road if it's needed. Making sure that you've got safe stopping places for people to maybe get on or off the vehicle, segregating more vulnerable road users, road markings, that sort of thing, and then also having safe working practices in place. So, you know, checking the vehicle safe before you even put it on the road, have safe operating procedures, and then having appropriate emergency response plans should a sort of hazardous event be realised.
Underpinning all of this work is a robust three-tiered testing process.
We've got three different types of test bed within the UK. So we've got controlled off-road environments, we've got semi-controlled environments, and then we've got public space. So this actually enables complexity to be gradually increased and that evidence base built to demonstrate safety. And one of the things that we're very keen on is ensuring that transition between the test beds is seamless and it doesn't create a barrier to testing with the safety requirements. So we're working with Meridian at the moment to ensure that there is one safety case standard. So people can start by demonstrating safety and testing in a controlled environment and then just build that safety case through a semi-controlled environment and then into public space. And then within that public environment, starting on less complex routes and building that complexity as that evidence base grows. And within there is simulation as well. And this area is still relatively unknown, but it will fit into the process and is likely to allow rare or less likely scenarios to be experienced by the automated vehicle. But one of the things that we're looking at the moment is how can we understand the reliability of that simulation and how can we demonstrate that reliability, because we really need to ensure that the vehicle behaviour that you can demonstrate in a simulated environment is truly representative of the vehicle behaviour in the real world.
When Elaine Hertzberg was struck and killed by an autonomous Uber vehicle in Tempe, Arizona in 2018, she, tragically, became the first recorded case of a pedestrian fatality involving a self-driving car. The safety driver on board at the time was watching an episode of The Voice on her phone. This revelation highlights the important role that safety drivers still play and the need for them to be properly trained and educated in their responsibilities. We're some way off the stage at which trained and attentive onboard personnel are no longer needed, Camilla believes.
Taking the safety driver out is a really big step, and the safety would need to be very clearly demonstrated or have remote operation so that full control of the vehicle can be maintained even if a safety driver isn't there. So I think really the overall safety of a vehicle, once you take the safety driver out, really does depend on the maturity of the software at that point.
Camilla says that even as the need for a trained safety driver decreases, this shouldn't mean that people stop thinking about their own safety whilst being driven from place to place.
At the moment, there's still that significant reliance on the safety driver and that requirement to monitor vehicle behaviour and take over the control of the vehicle as required. But we're already passive on a number of modes of transport, aeroplanes or boats, or even, you know, as a passenger in a car. But we still have to think about our own safety, for example, wearing a seatbelt or a life jacket, you know, whatever's appropriate. So I don't think it will remove the need for people to think about their safety. It just moves it to a different area.
But where mistakes do happen, however serious or not they may be, Camilla says that it's critical that we learn from them.
One of the key things within the world of safety is learning lessons, continuous improvement and feeding that information back. And I feel that any safety critical information should be shared between organisations. And it's certainly a behaviour that we'll be encouraging within SMLL to ensure that we understand where near misses have happened and ensuring that we have a very proactive approach to managing the risks and as much understanding about, you know, what risks there are on the network. So I do believe that safety critical information should be shared between organisations.
Testbeds like SMLL are vital to this cause and ensuring that driverless vehicles are as safe as they possibly can be before rolling out onto our roads.
Automated vehicles could save thousands of lives. You know, there's the information that the vehicle is programmed with so that it will obey the highway code, it won't speed, it's not going to drive when it's impaired or distracted. All of them sort of contribute to quite a large proportion of deaths on the road today. But my focus really is on how do we ensure safety before we get to that point. So, you know, during the testing of vehicles, during the refinement of the algorithms, how do we ensure safety during that sort of development stage? And I really feel that this can be achieved through having those minimum safety requirements, ensuring consistency and having a robust approach to managing safety. And that includes safety testing and also ensuring that you've got a trained and competent safety driver as well.
So will driverless cars be safer than current vehicles? Well, at this stage, that is perhaps more of an ambition than a definitive prediction. As Pete said, we have some way to go first to make sure that connected and autonomous vehicles are as safe as what we're already driving ourselves around in. From that point, it will be possible to roll out new features and functions that will make our roads safer places to be. Rigorous testing, alongside a consistent safety framework that all abide by, will help us achieve that reality, and both Camilla and Pete affirm in asserting that safety must always come first. All of these measures need to be supported by legislation and regulation too, of course. In London, Mayor Sadiq Khan has set an ambitious target to reduce road deaths in the capital to zero by 2041. The Vision Zero Action Plan that's aimed at achieving this target includes a number of measures to toughen safety standards. Safety is enshrined within everything that we do at SMLL, and our approach ensures the same safety measures are applied at every stage of testing, from simulations in virtual environments to private road trials and ultimately the use of CAVs on public tarmac. We recognise the need to support policymakers in meeting their own safety targets too. Because ultimately, the smart, joined-up transport systems of the future will only be worthwhile if they're safe too. It's as simple as that. That's all we have time for this month, but in our next episode, we'll be discussing human interaction and how people and cabs will get along out in the real world. Safely, we hope. You can listen to Journeymakers wherever you usually get your podcasts. And if there's a big question that you want us to tackle in another episode, then let us know on Twitter at SMLL_London. Until next time, see you in the future. How will you be getting there?